Hi.
Welcome to Comparing Apples to Oranges. I'm Mike.
Dan.
And this is another episode where we're going to take two things that don't belong in the same genre but end up in the same category, and we're going to rate them against each other using a set of criteria we designed specifically for this episode, and then we will tell you which one's better.
We're going to rate the hell out of them.
Yes. Yes, we are.
It's going to be great.
So this is the first episode of season three, or year three, whatever you want to call it.
Buckle up.
Of the podcast. We haven't stopped stopping. We're still all about going forward here.
That's the tagline. We haven't stopped stopping.
Even if you ask us to.
Even if you ask us to.
See you in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So today's category comes from Dan. This is his brainchild. He wanted to do soundtracks that did better than the movies. Better than can mean a couple different things. I think that it means commercially successful, critically acclaimed, and sort of just like better in that you would rather listen to the soundtrack than watch the movie.
And did we have an actual list that we pulled these from? I'm looking.
There were multiple lists, okay. Actually. You sent me one.
Okay, there's a BuzzFeed one.
That's the one you sent me.
Yeah.
And then after you sent me that, I'm like, let's see if there's any more out there. And okay. There were like three more. There was a handful of movie soundtracks that, or movies and their soundtracks that overlapped the couple of lists, because some would be like the, you know, 50 or movies, and some would be 12, yeah. And some would be 25, you know. So there was some bleed over. Some of the movies I had seen, and they were very bad. And some of the movies I had never even heard of, and I just assumed they were bad.
Yeah, there was a lot of them that I hadn't heard the soundtrack or seen the movie. So I kind of like that, though, that when I don't have a lot of preconceived notion
going in blind.
Yeah, I kind of like it. It usually does not work out well for us. Because we usually end up watching, like, Leprechaun 5.
Here's the thing. When you choose stuff, and the premise is that it's not tomato meter fresh, you kind of know what you're getting into. Dark Blue. Yeah. Kurt Russell knows what he did.
Yeah, he knows.
And it was terrible.
Yeah. Can't always trust that tomato meter, though.
The thermometer?
Yeah. There's a lot of scuttlebutt lately about the thermometer.
Oh, no. Did the thermometer touch someone?
Yeah, hashtag me too.
Oh, no.
Well, it turns out that the tomato meter is, that website is owned by Fandango, the movie ticket people.
Right, because you can buy tickets through the website.
Right. But Fandango is owned by Warner Brothers.
Oh, so they're juking those stats?
Yeah. There's some talk about how, like, apparently with Justice League, when that came out, it was... They kind of hid the score until the last minute.
So you're suggesting that people want to go see Justice League?
There's
who are already going to see it.
Well, no, not necessarily. But I think people that were kind of maybe on the fence about it.
Okay.
That used, like, my brother who lives his life by the tomato meter. Mm-hmm. Like, should I use a fork or a spoon? Let's look up what the tomato meter says I should use to eat these SpaghettiOs. Because on one hand, I can put all the SpaghettiOs on the individual prongs of the fork. Right.
It takes longer, but you get more. Yeah. Makes sense.
Let's look up what the tomato meter says about this. Oh, 97% of the people say I should use a spoon.
97?
Yeah, it's pretty high.
That is a landslide.
It's certified fresh. Okay. The spoon is a certified fresh utensil. So I don't know, man. Like with the tomato meter, there was that the Justice League thing that I thought of. They didn't release the score. Normally, the score comes out weeks before.
Okay.
Because critics have seen it, and enough critics have seen it that there's a score weeks before. But they knew it was going to not be so good, so they waited till the last minute. And then there was, staying on superhero movies, because that's all I know about.
Yeah.
Probably by the time this airs, Black Panther movie will have been out.
Yeah, because it's coming out next week.
There was talk about how... People who are fans of the DC movies versus the Marvel movies were going to put a bunch of bad reviews up just to...
That's so much time and effort.
To drop the score.
Let's pick Black Panther in February, which is Black History Month. Yeah. Also, like, this is the first major black actor yeah. superhero movie. Was like, let's do it. That sounds great, guys. Good thinking.
And then the other thing was, I kind of think, you know, I buy a lot of things off of Amazon. It kind of made me think of that. And I used to really trust the reviews on there, but apparently there's a scam now where people that are selling the product will create fake accounts and send these items to just random addresses.
Okay.
So it counts as a... So you might just get like a package on your doorstep.
Yeah.
That of... You don't know where it's from. You don't. They bought it with a gift card, so you can't trace the the
this
payment.
Seems like a lot of effort. I think people were just making fake ones.
It's a ton of effort. But that way, if they actually ship it to somebody, even if it's just some random person, it counts as a verified purchase.
Oh, okay.
And so when you look on Amazon, it said, "Oh, verified purchase." So it's not just.
I didn't know that level of.
Yeah, I just found this out the other day because there was I saw something on an online news report about somebody like in Connecticut or something who's been getting random packages for months.
That lucky SOB.
And they said at first it was kind of cool, but now we feel like we're participating in a scam.
So
I'm like, just take your free stuff.
Yeah, I'm
and
not
shut
sending
up.
It back, but I do want to blow the whistle.
But it reminded me that, and I know I'm getting like way off track here, but
where are you?
This is a story. This is story time with
story
Dan,
and a story
with,
and a story
with Dan and Mike.
Story inception.
I got a box from Amazon about a year ago, that was addressed to me. It had no packing slip or anything on the inside. I called Amazon. First thing I did was call my brothers and everything because sometimes they will send me
because there's one account
and stuff
yeah.
like that. You know, like instead of getting a Christmas gift and then wrapping it and bringing it to
like
me, they'll just say, just send it straight to them. Who cares? Because Amazon wraps it for you in a nice, pretty brown box with tape on it.
It's got a smile.
Yeah, it does. you can't replicate that. But I got six guitar hangers, six things that you put on your wall to hang guitars.
Seems oddly specific.
And
item.
I got
for them
a DVD copy of The Last Starfighter.
That's up your alley.
And a DVD copy of Short Circuit 2.
Forgot there was a sequel.
Johnny Five
is
still alive, apparently.
And that's probably what it says on the cover.
Everybody who would possibly have sent it to me, and nobody claimed that they were responsible.
What about Craigslist missed connections?
It could have been. You know, somebody saw me at Shop and Save.
You were hanging. So you looked hung, so I got you these.
So I got you The Last Starfighter on DVD.
No, the guitar hanger.
And six guitar hangers.
You know.
Because you short-circuited me.
Oh.
So I got you Short Circuit 2.
Because it's a sequel.
And that, I believe, has a white gentleman playing a Indian
robot.
Gentleman.
Oh. Ben Kingsley did that for the story about...
King and I?
Gandhi. So
won an Oscar for it.
Jim Caviezel played Jesus. I don't think... Hollywood's too concerned.
Well, his
Hollywood doesn't see color, Dan.
His initials were JC, though, so.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Jimmy C.
Jimmy Carter. There you go. So now that we've got thoroughly off track.
No, we're discussing, like, the value of rating things at all.
Okay, well, you brought it all back. Full circle.
Yeah, so Tomato Meter, IMDb, those are usually, like, the scores I look at.
Uh-huh.
However, sometimes I'm just like, I don't care, I'll watch it. Like,
yeah.
Like Netflix,
like
I don't trust Netflix at all anymore. Yeah. Their algorithm and Amazon's algorithm, just like, someone told me it's good, so I'll watch it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sort of thing here. But what these two albums used was like record sales per like unit. I guess that's what a record sale is.
G-unit?
That was kind of fun. Said that a lot. Oh, so the first one we talked about was Get Rich or Die Tryin',
G-Unit,
which is the name of the 2005 American hip-hop rap. We decided it's called a biopic, right? Or we say biopic.
I don't know.
So that movie, a biography opic, crime film starring 50 Cent, whose real name is...
50 Cent. You're trying to be grammatically correct.
Is his first name...
And super
is
white.
Is it Curtis?
Curtis, yeah. Curtis Jackson.
Curtis Jackson, okay. So this was his feature film debut, and it was similar to the Eminem's 8 Mile, mm-hmm. which it used as a template. So it was supposed to be loosely based on his own life.
Yeah, I kind of saw, like, I think they saw the success of 8 Mile.
Yeah.
That was, I think, pretty critically, I mean, not like super like critically acclaimed, but
people
was,
lost
it,
their minds.
It was well received.
People lost their minds. And they're like, this is probably the best movie about Eminem that's ever been made in
this. This is probably, I would say, the best. It's the best movie ever made
about 8 Mile, that strip of Detroit,
right?
When you go on Wikipedia and you type this in, the first thing that pops up is disambiguation. Because Get Rich or Die Trying is the name of the movie, uh-huh. which is taken from the name of his album that came out in 2003. Mm-hmm.
Was that his first album?
I'm trying to find out.
Have an intern.
So it says the name of the film was shared with 50 Cent's debut 2003 album.
Okay.
So his debut album was called this, 2003. 2 years later, the movie comes out with the same name, mm-hmm. and then they release a soundtrack, which is called Get Rich or Die Trying, music from and inspired by the motion picture. Mm-hmm. So when you type it, like, because the cover of the 2003 one is sort of like a pane of shattered glass with like a shirtless 50 Cent facing you.
Yeah.
And then the movie soundtrack is the same as the movie poster, which is the back of 50 Cent's back with a gun mm-hmm. in his pants.
Right.
He's not wearing a shirt. He is holding a baby.
He's holding a small child, yes.
And then he's got Southside tattooed across his shoulders.
Southside?
Now I'm like, you know what? I can't get that tattoo across my shoulders because they'll think I'm a poser.
Yeah, you are a poser, though.
Yeah, but people will know that by looking at the back of my back now, and I'm not into that. So that was sort of the first sign of, uh-oh. Like, because people would pick up the 2003 album and they're like, this is a pretty solid album, but it doesn't have a lot to do with the movie.
Right.
And then
also has the 2003 album also has shattered glass around 50.
Yes.
As if he had, like, a bullet had just traveled through the glass.
Because I think at this point he had been shot 5 times. Before his career.
I think it's like 9.
But when his career, he started, I thought it was just 5.
Oh, did he get shot, like, after he was...
It was more than one shooting, I think.
Because I thought that after he became a full-fledged rapper, that he kind of just started doing, like, commercials for vitamin water and fucking smiling and shit. And
that doesn't sound right.
He lost his street cred. Those brownies smell good, by the way.
Yeah, they do. So we picked this movie because it ended up going triple platinum. Mm-hmm. I think it went platinum the same year. Yeah, a month after the soundtrack was released, it had gone single platinum, which means it sells 1 million units.
Yeah. G units?
Here's the thing. I'm not going to get tired of it. You're going to be like, oh, Mike's going to get to... No, he's not.
I'm gonna do this to piss Mike off. And
no?
And Mike just keeps getting more excited.
Yeah. And then it sold, eventually went triple platinum worldwide. And I don't really know.
How many G units would that be?
Over 3 million.
That's a ton of albums.
Yeah.
That's so many albums.
Right. And so the movie itself did not get very high praise. They said that it has a, get ready. I know we're, we were throwing shade on Rotten Tomatoes, mm-hmm. but I'm going to use the thermometer. It has a 16% approval rating.
That's low.
Based on 117 reviews, which is a lot of people pandering it.
But if you do look at the, I think, like, the percentage of people that liked it was pretty high.
Okay.
Like, the audience score was pretty high.
Which is another category that Dan suggested for another mm-hmm. future episode, which is, like, critics versus audience. And that, that's a big thing, too. Because, you liked the Eminem mm-hmm. one, critics. You liked the story about, like, the rough and tumble life of a white rapper.
Yeah.
And you don't like 50 Cent. That's 50 Cent apostrophe S. That's going to be hard to say. Curtis's.
Like, you are so white.
Well, it's just like, what? Yeah. So that's an issue. And then we picked the 1977 soundtrack from Saturday Night Fever, which was a musical drama film directed by John Badham? I don't know his name.
Yeah. Bet them.
So just a quick synopsis of what happens in the movie according to Wikipedia. John Travolta is Tony Manero, a working class young man who spends his weekends dancing and drinking at a local Brooklyn discotheque. And then there's Stephanie Mangano. I didn't watch this movie, don't know how to say it.
Stephanie Mango.
It's his dance partner and eventual confidant.
Oh, and spoiler then, alert, jeez.
And then Annette, his former dance partner and would-be girlfriend. While in the disco, Tony is a champion dancer.
It's a discotheque, Mike.
Yeah, sorry. Did I... Oh, what a faux pas on my part, calling it just a disco. It says, his circle of friends and weekend dancing help him cope with the harsh realities of life. His dead-end job... clashes with his unsupportive and squabbling parents, racial tensions in the local community, and his general restlessness. The film showcased aspects of music, dancing, and subculture surrounding the disco era. Symphony orchestrated melodies, haute couture, styles of clothing,
stop it.
pre-AIDS sexual promiscuity, and graceful choreography. This movie sounds like real trash. It's like all I remember is the opening sequence, which they're playing
Staying Alive,
mm-hmm. and he's like walking down the street, and then he ends up in his job, and he's like carrying a can of paint.
Yeah,
and then he gets yelled at for being late. Yeah, and I'm like, I just don't think.
And he turned it off.
Here's the thing: it's gonna be like one of those like Beach Bingo, Annette Funicello, and Frankie
Avalon?
Yeah, movies where it's just like...
So it's going to be amazing?
It's just so disconnected from reality that it's difficult to watch.
Every time I've ever been to the beach, though, like, to their credit...
You play bingo?
It's been kind of like that.
But there's no problems.
Everybody just starts dancing, and there are no problems at the beach. That's why it's the beach.
Ah, Jaws.
Although the last time I went to the beach, I got stung by a stingray.
You peed on it, realized I was jellyfish.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, God, now I'm covered in urine.
And being arrested for public indecency.
And injected with stingray venom.
Isn't it like a sticker? They stick you?
Yeah, they stick you and then they like inject you with the venom and then it like works its way like...
Then you get pregnant.
Yeah, then you get impregnated and then you poop out a stingray, a little baby stingray that you can raise.
The magic of life. It finds a way.
It does find a way.
Jurassic Park reference.
I guess what like it gets into your bloodstream and like works its way like I got stung
to your
in
heart.
Foot. Yeah, eventually.
Dude, stingrays are scary now. You know,
they took the croc hunter from us.
Yeah, that went right to his like he got stabbed in the heart.
Well,
that was just bad luck.
The stingray. The way I tell the story is the stingray tried to stab me in the heart, and I like fought it off, like held on to it.
Yeah. And wrestled with it?
I wrestled with it, and then, like, he gave up and then stung me on the foot and ran away.
Yeah. What a nerd.
He tried to take me out like the croc hunter, but I wouldn't let him.
You're too tough.
And every time I tell the story, the stingray gets bigger.
Steve Irwin, R.I.P.
Yeah, man.
You were a true hero. We're very sad you're dead.
For my homies.
Yeah. And so, in sort of a twist, when we usually talk about bad movies on here, it's because everybody agrees they're bad. However... this movie not only has a great tomato meter score of 86%.
It's awfully high.
Based on 44 reviews.
That seems low.
Because this movie's been out for 41 years. Yeah.
Yet three times as many people have reviewed Get Rich or Die Trying.
And then apparently, this is going to take you by surprise. In 2010, Saturday Night Fever was deemed culturally... historically, or aesthetically significant by the Library of Congress and selected for preservation in the National Film Registry. I like how they threw that "or" in there so you don't get confused.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not all three, guys. Yeah. No way.
No movie's all three.
No way.
The Godfather's like a 98% on the tomato meter.
The thermometer.
That means there's some people out there who didn't like it.
2% are like, you know what, this is... propagating negative stereotypes of Italian Americans.
However, Paddington 2 currently sits at 100%.
Is it even in theaters?
Yeah.
Okay. It's pretty good.
Toy
Story 3 has 100%, and I have problems with that movie.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be happy if people said it's 80, or between 80 and 90.
Yeah.
Because I just understand that's how people feel about it. Like, I don't feel that way.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to argue that other people think it's really good, but 100% is stupid.
Yeah.
It's not, it's a kid's movie, so it's not going to be good.
Yeah.
Like in a film, it doesn't have to be good for it, for people to like it and give sure. it a good review, but 100%, come on.
Yeah.
Also, while I was doing some research, found out that there is a sequel to Saturday Night Fever. Did you know this, Dan?
Oh, hold on. Is it called Staying Alive?
Do you know who directed it? First of all, yes. Do you know who directed it?
Was it Sylvester Stallone?
Did you read my notes?
No.
Okay.
I think I remember that for some reason.
It came out in 83, so when disco was
yeah.
firmly gone, like out of the zeitgeist.
I had totally forgot that until you... I had totally forgot there was a sequel okay. until you said that.
Yeah.
And then years of working at video stores popped the
yeah.
the movie
you
cover.
You can probably see what it looks
I
like.
I can
yeah.
see it. In my, yeah. It's just John Travolta's face with like a headband on. He's just got a headband.
That's weird.
The cover to Saturday Night Fever is kind of cool. He's like yeah. doing like the disco pose. And
next
it's like,
to the... He's pointing to the Gibbs.
Yeah. Well, that's the cover to the soundtrack. He's not... Yeah. That's the Gibbs... The Brothers Gibb are not on the cover of the...
Oh,
the movie.
Found a fun fact in my research. It said the Bee Gees' involvement in the film did not begin until post-production.
Wow.
As John Travolta asserted, I think in like the DVD commentary, the Bee Gees weren't even involved in the movie in the beginning. I was dancing to Stevie Wonder and Boz Scaggs.
Wow.
Which is just like, what a happy coincidence.
Nice.
Maybe that's, I don't know. So why did we pick this soundtrack, Dan, if the movie got such a high rating? Because the soundtrack went, are you ready? 16 times platinum.
Yep.
So if you're keeping track at home and you know that one platinum equals 1 million uh-huh. sold, GGG
yeah.
units sold, this movie sold the soundtrack
insane.
Sold 16 million GGG units.
The best-selling soundtrack of all time, by far.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah. So I'm glad you mentioned that because... You know, I think people would say, well, you know, it's obvious why you picked the Get Rich or Die Trying one
right.
because of the discrepancy between the...
It's noticeably panned as
yeah,
a film.
Tomato meter score and the, you know, success of sales of the
right.
of the soundtrack. But Saturday Night Fever actually had a good tomato meter score, but you cannot even compare the success of the movie to the success of the soundtrack.
It said it stayed on the top... the album stayed atop the album charts for 24 straight weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So just under half a year. From January to July in 1978,
yeah.
it stayed on Billboard's album charts for 120 weeks.
Yeah, I think it said...
Until March 1980. So for 3 straight years.
6 number one singles from the album.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Like, you don't even get that from like a Michael Jackson album.
Right.
Or... You know, 6 number one singles from the album is insanity. And this was actually, when did this album come out?
77.
77. And, like, disco was dead within 3-4 years.
From a cultural standpoint, like, that the movie would sell any more soundtracks,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, the soundtracks would sell any more units, yes. But, I mean, like, I'm sure there was still... pockets just
yeah.
like people there's still like discos that you could find now like
they're called
know.
Discotheques
shit.
Disco stew
see there you go
it's going to the disco
but like no definitely like once the 80s started everybody just sort of agreed that this fad is over
because mm-hmm.
we found out like cocaine does kill you and it's not just a super drug
what I disagree with that. That's fake news.
I think that's
fake news.
That's what Staying Alive is all about.
Yeah.
Him fighting his cocaine.
I have the best cocaine. Everybody knows that.
He puts ketchup on it.
I put ketchup on it. I burn it to a crisp. I'm covered in ketchup. It's the best. It's great. Everybody knows my cocaine is the best.
All right. So those are two soundtracks that did better than their films. And we're going to come back in just a moment with some criteria, and we're going to find out which one's better.
G-Unit!
Oh, we're back. And we're ready to drop some criteria on you to decide which movie soundtrack was better than its movie. What?
Well said.
We're talking about which movie soundtrack that's better than the movie is better than the other movie soundtrack that's better than the movie.
That's why you're the best in the business.
This is live radio. The pressure I feel is immeasurable.
Yeah. There's no comparison.
The critics, the sponsors, the fans, you know, everybody's, I know they're listening.
Everybody's on your ass.
Yeah. That you would think that'd be a good thing. It's not.
And you love it.
Well, maybe I do. That's none of your business, Daniel. Yeah,
I agree.
All right. Number one, when we talk about albums, we talk about re-listenability / recommendability. So which one would you listen to again or tell somebody else to stop what they're doing, plug in their earbuds, and just like jam out to Saturday Night Fever's soundtrack? Mm-hmm. Number two, which soundtrack did a good job of capturing the narrative of the film? Because we talk about soundtracks a lot, and one of the aspects that makes them sort of stand out, makes them enjoyable, is that they remind you of parts of the movie, and that sort of lets you experience it in a different way. So not necessarily a fuller way, as like you were watching a film with a good soundtrack, but when you're listening to the soundtrack, you sort of get caught up again in the splendor of the film. Sort of going into that one, we did not actually see either of these movies. Not on purpose, just because, you know, you got stuff to do. And Dan suggested, which one of these soundtracks makes you want to watch the movie?
Mm-hmm.
I wrote down, piques your interest.
Mm-hmm.
And then our last one, I think's a really good one. Dan, can you explain it to us?
All right, so when I was looking at the albums, actually one of the reviews that I saw on Amazon for the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack was that they were upset because the cover led you to believe that it was an entire Bee Gees soundtrack. Because the Bee Gees are on the album, like, John Travolta is basically pointing to them with the disco pose.
And that's how you prayed back in disco era.
Right.
You want to get down on your hands and knees, you would disco point.
Right, to the Bee Gees.
Right. Well,
or the disco ball.
Whoever you picked.
Yeah. Donna Summer, queen of disco.
Yeah.
He was upset, this reviewer, because it led you to believe that the entire soundtrack was by the Bee Gees, when in fact only about... half the songs are Bee Gees songs. And the same thing with Get Rich or Die Trying. It was the name of a 50 Cent record that actually came out. Oh, okay.
Thanks, Spotify.
Spotify's recommending Black Panther to you.
The album by Kendrick Lamar.
Nice.
The album and music from inspired by. That's the new phrase.
But he does not do the entire album, right?
No. Okay. I know the Weeknd's on there, and that's got to be... I'm not a big fan of him.
No, I'm not either. I don't like the way his hair looks.
I don't like the way he sings music.
I can't feel my face when I'm with you, Mike.
Oh.
But I love it.
Sorry. That was Mike got us talk off. About getting off topic. That's my bad.
Mike got us off track.
That's my bad.
Yeah, that's why you're the best in the business. The Get Rich or Die Trying album, you would think that it would be an entire 50 Cent album, but it's not. He appears, you know, sings the hook in a lot of the songs, but most of the songs on the album are not 50 Cent.
And today, they're both listed as performed by various artists,
right.
But that's also because, like, it's easier to document that sort of stuff now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's easier to put that in the correct category.
Sure. So, I kind of thought it'd be fun if we took out the two prominent leads from each album. If we took away the Bee Gees and took away 50 Cent and just looked at the secondary artists... that do, you know, the other half of these albums, and we just looked at those in isolation, which one would be more entertaining or more quality, higher quality.
All right, interesting. Cool. All right, let's start with re-listenability. I listened to both albums twice just to sort of, like, get a good feel because they were so different that it's easy to, like, forget about one when you're... They're also pretty long as like albums go.
Both,
I don't
like 16, 18 songs.
Yeah, I don't really know how long like most soundtracks are, but I know most albums like stop around 12. So these were a little bit longer, We did skip the Serbian remix of Staying Alive.
Cause
you know,
because you're racist.
Because I'm a coward. That's why. I wasn't ready for how cool it was. Serbians are white, Dan. So, anyway.
Still racist.
Yeah, I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying. So which one would you rather listen to again?
Saturday Night Fever.
Okay.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised by both of the albums.
So most of the stuff we do, we end up pretty much either hating ourselves or hating both of the things at the end. Yeah. I liked both these albums.
Yeah, I didn't, and I think I told you before we started recording that both these albums were a nice mix of really good and garbage. So both had a nice mix of that. It's like they went out of their way to
talk about variety of spice of life, Dan.
Because you can't do an album that's all good.
Yeah. No. Why would you do that?
That's not possible.
That's not how you sell records.
Because you have to have some garbage on there so you appreciate the good stuff even more.
And I do want to point out that, you know, Saturday Night Fever's 40 plus years old and Get Rich or Die Trying's like over 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So they're both, I wouldn't consider what they're putting out modern music.
No.
So we're going to, you know, look back on it with a little bit of, we want to put a little distance between how good the music is and how it's not.
So I for me, Saturday Night Fever just had so many catchy songs
that I think
you would want to listen to multiple times and still not get tired of hearing them.
Also ones that you easily recognize that you've heard hundreds of times in, you know, movies, TV, commercials, all sorts of stuff.
So like Staying Alive, you know, which is how the movie, even if you haven't seen the movie, you know that that's how the movie opens.
For sure.
I think I've told you the story with my dad with Staying Alive, right?
I don't think you've told the audience.
He had a my dad likes to make his own like best of albums instead of just.
I completely forgot about this story until right now.
And he made a best of the Bee Gees album.
Not just an album. It was an MP3 CD.
Yeah, so it was full, like 30 songs. Yeah,
minimum 2 hours of uninterrupted Bee Gees.
And there was like live versions of songs on there.
Deep cuts.
B-sides.
How
Deep Is Your Love? Deep cuts. And Staying Alive was not. No. Didn't make the cut.
He refused to.
He put 32 Bee Gees songs on there.
Couldn't have just.
Such a big Bee Gees
fan. He didn't
even
put in the Serbian remix.
No. He didn't put. Staying Alive wasn't even on there. He just said, there was no room for it, bud.
That's the first song on this album. But 18 songs.
But I guess that's his version of them
selling out.
So, and he doesn't like.
16 million times.
He doesn't like anybody being successful. He wants his bands to be starving artists.
Yeah.
I discovered you.
Yeah.
You make music only for me. If you start making music for anybody else,
that appeals to the masses.
Then it's no good.
So I picked Get Rich or Die Trying as my re-listen ability because I guess I hadn't listened to a lot of 50 Cent, and I don't know particularly why. Like, I don't think he's a cookie cutter copy of any of the artists I'm about to talk about, but I don't see why, like, he would be put in a different echelon. Like, I thought him, Jay-Z, and Nas sort of like you could mistake a couple of their songs for each other. Not necessarily they're like chart toppers, but I didn't really see that these guys were too different, and I don't really know why 50 Cent isn't played more comparatively.
Yeah,
because I really enjoyed some of his music.
The
not all of it, of course.
I mean, he's kind of had, you know, the regular mix of songs where he, you know, really appeals to like the street audience.
Yeah, the gangster group.
Right. But then he has also had.
Get a little introspective.
Well, he knows how to do the songs that he knows are going to be like radio hits.
Yeah. And like club bangers too. Yeah. Like, he understands. That's the thing is, like, I didn't really understand why I hadn't heard much of 50 Cent. Until album's the most I ever listened to him.
Okay. I mean, probably for me too, but I guess I've just heard, you know, a lot of his stuff, like candy shop and you know, In the Club, which is like probably his most popular song.
Yeah, radio friendly.
The first one that came out.
Club friendly.
And you know, anytime you put that song on, even, you know, God, it's 2003 that album came out.
Yeah.
God, it's been 15 years.
Yeah.
That's insane that it's been 15 years since that album came out. But whenever, like, In the Club comes on, everybody starts moving because you just, it's got kind of got that, you know, unmistakable, you know, hook to it,
right,
beat. So I guess I've heard, like, I don't know, I've never been like a 50 Cent guy.
Yeah.
Like I was like a Tupac guy or a Biggie guy.
Because in the 90s.
Yeah.
Once Tupac died, so did your
I'm done.
Your love
done.
Of popular rap
of music.
Music
in general.
Popular music.
Yeah, music in general died with when Pac and Biggie died. Like, no music, to me, no music has been made since then.
What about hologram music that Tupac sings?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's...
that's a very small genre.
That's
I'm
based
aware of that.
On, that's based on, like, motion capture that they got from him, like, now, because he's still alive, like,
okay,
on an island somewhere. It's kind of like I was never really like an Eminem guy.
Right.
I'm familiar with a lot of his stuff,
mm-hmm,
and I like a lot of his stuff.
Yeah, but you don't want to sit down with an album.
Not really.
You don't want to follow his story.
Not really.
That's
like,
fine. Yeah.
But like, you know, if a song comes on, I'm not gonna like turn it off. Like,
yeah,
he's got a lot of like good stuff and catchy stuff, and he kind of reminds me of, you know, it's funny that you mentioned Eight Mile, because him and 50's Journey just seem kind of very similar in how they have approached marketing their music.
Right.
You know, they have that mix of, you know, music that is, you know, appeals to like the hardcore audience, and then music that appeals to the radio audience.
Right.
And, you know, like the first Slim Shady album was like with the goofy videos and stuff like that. I mean, even like the whitest of white people were like, you know, on board with it.
Oh yeah.
And that's, to me, that's genius.
Yeah.
If you can, you know, appeal to everybody, that's
right,
how you get rich or die trying.
No, the whole, you just get rich. You don't try to die.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. So split on that one. Let's talk about which one follows the narrative of the film or produces a narrative that you can easily pay attention to.
I thought that Get Rich or Die Trying kind of gave me a better idea of, and I think this is different than Piques Your Interest. I think it it gave me a better idea of what was going on in the film. It kind of, I don't know, it, I don't want to say it like told the story to you.
I don't think it did.
But it,
I think it did a bad job of
really
telling the story.
Yeah.
I thought it told a story,
mm-hmm,
so I gave it my vote. But, like, none of it seems to talk about, like, where he came from.
No.
Or, like, events that are happening. I enjoyed it, and, like, you get to know more about him.
Yeah.
Especially the one he's singing the What If song, and
yeah,
it's just, like, how he's talking about, like, if he starts dancing like Usher, everybody would just flip out.
Mm-hmm.
If he started, like, if he was backpack rap, everybody would call him a poser. Like, if he wore suits like Jay-Z, people, you know, would say he's not gangster enough. Like, I thought he did a good job of telling the story of about him currently, but I was under the impression that the movie talks about his past, and I didn't get very much of that from the album.
Yeah, I mean, neither one kind of gave me a idea of, like, a really good idea of...
Wait, when you were listening to a fifth of Beethoven, you didn't get...
Da-da-da-da-da.
Synthesizer. I actually like that song a little bit.
Yeah, I like that song,
too. It wasn't great, but it was pretty fun.
I like that song, too. But, like, Hustler's Ambition...
Yeah.
Which
is the first track, so, of course, that's, like, the strongest one.
I think Fake Love...
Yep.
...kind of gives you an idea of... I mean, is very specific in what it's saying, you know, and it kind of makes you think that could be, you know, part of the narrative of the film.
I want to read you about Window Shopper.
Oh, okay.
It says, was released as the album's second single. serves as the film's theme song, which I didn't pick up on, was slightly... Jackson claims that Ja Rule, Jadakiss, Nas, and Fat Joe are window shoppers, as he was feuding with these rappers at the time. That's a lot of guys to feud with.
Well...
after you get shot five times. That's way too many.
50 is... he likes to outsource.
Oh, yeah.
To a lot of different... he likes to have a lot of irons in the fire.
That's smart.
Just in case...
a lot of pies.
Just in case a lot of... just in case one of his feuds starts to fizzle.
Yeah.
He's always got a couple on the back burner.
Right.
Ready to take their place. And that's smart.
He did a lot of name dropping in this album.
Yeah. You have to... always be feuding with somebody if you want to be successful.
Always be feuding.
I think in life, and just in general, not just in the rap world,
yeah,
but just in life, you always have to be feuding with somebody to kind of give you that push forward.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That sounds a bad way to
live.
I have
six feuds going on right now.
Death feuds? Blood feuds? What are we talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, all that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, all that.
Oh,
it's,
no.
It's I like to keep things interesting.
Yeah, so your Twitter fans can...
yeah.
Watch it.
I like a lot of thumbs and a lot of pies. I get a lot of thumbs and a lot of people right now.
That would start a feud right there.
Yep, that's how I start my feuds.
Very unpleasant.
I walk right up to them and there you
give
go.
Give them the old thumbs up.
Give them the old oil check.
I like it. All right, what were we talking about?
Da-na-na-na.
Yeah. Oh, so
yeah.
Speaking of soundtracks that did really well, we mentioned how the 3-6 Mafia's like won the Academy Award for their song from the movie Hustle and Flow that they wrote for Terrence Howard.
Yeah.
And the song is It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp. Now that story is told through that song of the character.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting something, especially like it's super common for rap albums to have skits or parts of the songs that are introduced by people talking or just some overarching narrative just in general, regardless if it's soundtrack or not. And it was unusually like gone from this.
Like, kind of thought that maybe
absent.
They would like intersperse like dialogue from the film or something like that.
Yeah, it was unusually absent.
Yeah, so neither one of them, and I think you wrote them in the wrong spot there.
Maybe,
for
who knows?
Because
we'll find out.
You're the best in the business.
I'm a little drunk.
But I think, I don't think, you know, either album did a really good job of kind of giving you an idea of the narrative.
Right.
But I thought if I had to pick one, I'd probably go with the Get Rich or Die Trying.
Okay, so let's go into which one piques your interest. Which one, what movie do you want to watch now because you've listened to the album?
Probably Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah, me too.
Just
actually.
Because I think just it kind of ties into my re-listenability and the fact that there were so many songs that were so catchy that I kind of want to see how the film correlates with those songs because as you know, I'm a big fan of
big
musical numbers.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
why I say the have you had a chance to see Hugh Jackman in The Greatest Showman?
I have had multiple chances. I could just go whenever I want. I'm not going to.
Amazing. It's amazing. Do yourself a favor.
Don't listen to him, guys.
Dude, I'm telling you. My wife's seen it 3 times.
That's a lot of times.
I've seen it twice.
It's in theaters still.
I know. And it was supposed to...
My
brother was just telling me it was supposed to be out... we're recording this in February, so first of all, happy Black History Month to everybody. As we record this. But
right.
My brother was telling me that it was supposed to be out on DVD by now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been so insanely successful in the theater that they just keep the theater run going.
Wow.
And it actually started off the first week they had... It did very poorly in the theater.
Okay.
And usually it's like the law of diminishing returns.
Right.
Every week it's out, you know, you have like a 50% drop in how much money
drop.
It makes. Yeah. G-Unit.
It gets shot by a gun.
Yeah.
So it stops making money.
If you don't get rich, it dies trying.
You get murdered.
Yeah. But it's actually gone up. The revenue for that movie's actually gone up. So,
interesting.
That's my love of big musical numbers. And
okay.
I'm really intrigued to see. I know it's going to be disco dancing and bullshit like that,
yeah.
but I want to see how it all works together.
Right.
And I just think it's like a wonderfully catchy soundtrack, and I want to see how it has made me interested in seeing a movie that I was previously not really interested in seeing, because it's been out for 40 something years yeah. and I haven't seen it yet.
Right. So mine's kind of the opposite reason. I don't want to see Saturday Night Fever, but I think that Get Rich or Die Trying would be a bad movie
mm-hmm.
because the album did a better job of, like, I don't want to watch what they're describing. I would rather just hear about it, because I don't think that they would do a good job of capturing that without being cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, that sort of, like, braggadocio, like, bigger-than-life rap idea is better caught up in music rather than, like, I enjoy rap music rather than rap music videos where it's just like scanning over a party and then counting money.
Yeah,
like I found the narrative,
I mean, because I see that every day. Like, I don't need to see that on exactly. TV.
I want a distraction from my
yeah
stacks
yeah
those lining I'm, up that paper.
I'm just like, okay, well, it's just like looking in a mirror. Yeah. So, like, why am I even watching it?
It's like, oh, 400 people having a party.
Yeah. And there's strippers everywhere, right. And people shaking their ass. And there's, you know, drugs and,
yeah.
and money.
I want to see a story.
Yeah.
Right? Sell me your story.
I want to escape from my reality.
Because the thing is,
taken deeper into it.
If you're going to make a movie about your life.
Good luck, ladies. This is how we do it when we do it. Like, we just wanna tear the club up. We do it like ain't nothing to it. The way we do it, now everybody put your hands up. Let's go.
The presumption is that it's worth telling, and that people will find it either interesting, inspiring, or, you know, learn more about you. And I found that through the album, so I don't really know what the movie would do.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's sort of because there was such a lack of narrative in the Saturday Night Fever that I'd be interested to see, like, what actually happens in it. Like, I would go in with less of an idea of what's happening, and I think that would be more interesting to me.
Sure.
All right, let's
hit the last one.
With our variety of artists, which soundtrack had more quality secondary artist in it?
Well, first of all, I thought that both albums had some really good artists
right.
on there that were not the primary
the
artists.
Or 50.
Yeah. For example, on the Get Rich or Die Trying.
Big Mob Deep. Fan.
Mob Deep yeah. on there.
Nate Dogg again.
Nate Dogg.
Rears his ugly head.
Yeah. Rest in peace,
yeah,
Nate
sorry,
Dogg.
Sorry, guy.
Nate Dogg's one of, like I think I said on a previous podcast that, like, that there's like a double disc, like, Nate Dogg album
mm-hmm.
that's like one of the best hip-hop albums I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Like, top 10 hip-hop albums. And nobody knows that it even, like, exists. G-Funk Classics Volume 1 and 2. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it's so good. And but on the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, I mean, you've got Kool & the Gang.
Right.
You've got Casey and the Sunshine Band. I mean, that's like some...
The Bee Gees.
That's like some... You've got this guy named Barry Gibb.
Ralph
like a,
McDonald.
A solo Barry
more
Gibb.
More of a Maurice Gibb sort of guy.
Yeah, are you?
No.
Andy Gibb. I think Andy Gibb did Shadow Dancing, maybe. Do I have you? Do I Shadow Dancing? Maybe
nope, don't know that one. Wrong.
It's kind of hard to tell the brothers Gibb apart from one another.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong, there's some secondary artists that are garbage on here. For example, Tavares, who does his version of...
I think he was a pitcher for the Cardinals for a while.
Yeah,
remember he punched the phone?
Yeah, Julian Tavares. He kind of looked like Freddy Krueger. I don't know if it's a guy or if it's a band, but Tavares does their version of More Than a Woman, which
More
is like
a...
Like a poor karaoke version of the Bee Gees
yeah.
version of More Than a Woman. And then on the Get Rich or Die Trying album, I mean, I'm not not a big fan. A lot of Lloyd Banks on there,
yeah.
and I'm not a big fan.
Young Buck. Young Buck wasn't bad.
Young Buck's all right. Spider Loke, not a big fan. Bustin' was sweet, now I'm smarter. I'm all about something to eat. I'm on the road, spend 30 days a month in this week. But I'm still gon' hustle and cheat. Let's go.
I'm more, yeah, it's Tone Loke or nothing for us.
Well said, man. Yeah. His brother Spider Loke is not as good as...
Yeah. It just, you know, there's only so much talent that can be distributed in a family. Yeah. We learned that from the Bee Gees.
Yeah, that's true.
We learned
true.
That from the Jacksons, all
that's
right?
That's true. I think Jacksons are the perfect example where Michael...
What about Janet? She did pretty good.
Yeah, Janet did well. However, they both soaked up all of the male and female talent. And there wasn't much left over for Jermaine or Tito or LaToya, who did the Psychic Hotline for a little while.
That's too bad.
And then I don't even know if I can do it. Can you name the other two of the Jackson 5?
Joe Jackson.
No, that was the dad.
And Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson, we've said already.
Oh, then no, of course not.
So there's Michael, Tito, Jermaine. Okay. Those are the three that a lot of people could come up with. There's two more. There's Jackie Jackson.
Oh, come on. And Spider Loke.
And Spider Loke. Marlon Jackson is the other one.
Huh.
So if you ever get a trivia night there, there's
Jackie
Marlon? And Marlon, like Marlon Wayans.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tito and Jermaine. Commit that to memory, everybody.
Yeah, Tito is probably number two.
But, like, the joke is that is because he was so untalented.
Yeah.
Comparatively.
Yeah.
That's the only... Was he, like, the closest in age, or was he the oldest?
I think he was the oldest.
That's probably why we know him.
Because, like, when you hear, like I'll Be There, you hear Michael singing one verse, and I think Tito singing the other verse. And it's, like, the oldest one and the youngest one both singing together.
That makes
and
sense.
It's kind of like that... what's the word I'm thinking of? Like, where there's a discrepancy between...
Octave change?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Okay. There's, like, a big... A discrepancy between the two there. But I think with these, there was a mix, like I said, of secondary artists that were high quality and a mix of secondary artists that were kind of just present.
Right.
So who did you pick for...
I did Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah,
because my favorite song was Boogie Shoes. And that's actually by a secondary artist.
I wanna put on my boogie shoes.
I can't sing today because my voice is bad, but...
I wanna put on my boogie shoes. Just boogie with you. Yeah. I wanna put on my boogie shoes. Just boogie with you.
I was dancing, don't worry. No, but like, and I like the Bee Gees. I'm not a super fan like your dad or a casual fan like you.
I don't even know if I'd call my dad a super fan because he didn't put fucking Stayin' Alive on the Best Of album. So fuck that guy.
But, like, I wasn't looking forward to the other songs by them because it's so disco-y.
Yeah.
And that was like A Fifth of Beethoven was a little different. Like, it was a little something different. And, you know, we got a little variety, and that's what I want from various artists. You know, when you have more than one person contributing to a movie soundtrack, the premise is that the movie encapsulates a lot of stuff. Things happen in it. It's not the same thing over and over again. And I think that's what I appreciated most about these secondary artists, where 50 Cent's Curtis's album was primarily, it was almost all the same stuff over and over again. It was just like slightly different. Like, they covered The Street. They covered How It's Rough. You know, they covered
Which
How
it
you,
is.
You Have to Be Tough, and then they covered Bangin' Hoes. Like, those are the four things, and they just...
Those are my four pillars for...
For a stable society.
For life.
Yeah, for getting rich and not dying.
And not
but
dying.
But trying to...
I actually have a book coming out where it's called The Four Pillars.
And then you don't know what they are until you buy the book.
Right, and the fourth chapter is called Bangin' Hoes.
Yeah. I like the way you're moving, girl. Show me how you do that, girl. I like the way you do that, shorty. Man,
man, can you do something for me?
I can't stand here and watch her dance. She got me coming out of my pants, and I don't wanna miss my chance. Jump on her if I could.
Thing and Demhoes.
So
Demhoes stuff.
I'm kind of wondering if you I think you read the sample chapters that I sent you.
I mean, I told you I read them. So
because it seems like you know exactly what's going through my mind right now. And it seems like 50 does too.
Yeah. So and I just was a little frustrated that every single song was on the same topic, and there wasn't like I would have assumed maybe they would have like. Heads like a singer, like a crooner or an R&B guy come on.
Maybe like Danny Boy.
Yeah, just like... sort of stopped me in my tracks. I got a little frustrated there. but just like... And then there was one female and she wasn't... She was on a 50 track. Like they didn't even... You know what I mean? Like it just... just stuck so closely to it. Not that I thought they were bad. The quality was better with like... I actually enjoyed some of the non-BG songs... off of this disco record.
Yeah, man. I'm like I said with Kool and the Gang is I mean fucking amazing. Like when you think of just like some of the songs they put out, like, you know, Celebration and Get Down on It. Jungle Boogie and Ladies Night and just some of the, you know, Kool and the Gang stuff. And then like KC and the Sunshine Band, very underrated, I think, as far as...
I don't know their story, but I don't know how popular they were right now. Because they had their own, they stood on their own for a while.
Yeah.
Like doing, you know, some of their like fun 70s stuff, not so much disco, but...
What about Shake, Shake, Shake?
Yeah.
Shake, Shake, Shake. Shake your booty.
Can't sing along, Dan. I want
shake
to, but
your
I can't.
Booty.
Also, I kind of even like that Calypso song
That's
a little bit.
That's the way. Uh-huh.
Like that Calypso
I like
song?
Like it.
You know, so the one I didn't like the Manhattan Skyline one or whatever.
Yeah,
it was that was too. That was too disco-y.
Yeah,
where the Calypso one's just like, hey, this is disco. You're like, whatever, man. Who cares? Just do your thing.
Do you want to do your favorite and least favorite songs on the album?
I'm just going to do favorite because I can't remember my least favorite. Because, you know, I clumped together a handful of the my least favorite ones. So my favorite off of Saturday Night Fever was Boogie Shoes.
Yeah.
And that one's popped up in some movies and TV shows a couple times. And I actually, like, put it on. I, like, found it on Spotify because I liked it so much. So that's my favorite from Saturday Night Fever. What about you?
I'm kind of torn between...
you can do more than one.
You Should Be Dancing.
Which is fun.
And How Deep Is Your Love.
Oh, okay.
Which I think is... I think How Deep Is Your Love was actually the first single that was released. It wasn't Staying Alive.
I know your eyes in the morning sun. I feel you touch me in the pouring rain. And the moment that you wander far from me, I want to feel you in my arms again. And you come to...
It's definitely a love song, of course, because it's called How Deep Is Your Love. I love the harmonies in there, and I love how it's...
How deep is your love for How Deep Is Your Love, the song?
It's, I'd say, 6...
Hectometers?
Sometimes 7 inches on a good day.
All right, look at you. not even bragging. Yeah, just tell me the truth. I appreciate that.
If my testosterone patches are working,
your T's up.
I think that one is kind of the thing I like about How Deep Was Your Love is that it is not like super disco-y,
right?
And it's a nice change of pace, but it's still a really good song too that kind of holds up,
right?
But if I'm going like super disco, I'd go with You Should Be Dancing.
I think the problem I had with some of the disco music was that it took itself too seriously, mm-hmm. where it wasn't fun. Mm-hmm. I thought disco music's supposed to be fun, mm-hmm. Cause you're in a club with other people and you're all dancing. So yeah. It shouldn't be like listening to The Weeknd is not fun because
it sucks.
That yes, it's catchy and some of this disco stuff was catchy, but it's like singing about sad stuff or mm-hmm. it's like it's taking itself too seriously, and that's I didn't enjoy that. Where the most fun disco music I found was the most danceable, the most where people are gonna sing along and it's about a specific upbeat topic.
Yeah.
Not to say that disco music can't be about serious stuff, but disco particularly just seems like it's only going to be played at a discotheque. Mm-hmm. So why would you ever try to dabble with serious topics? Yeah, I don't know.
It's specifically made to do
to get that
drugs
booty,
too.
To get that booty shaken.
It's like
to get that finger point.
Studio 54.
To get that thumb up there.
People doing lines of coke off the cracks of each other's butt. And then you go out and dance,
yeah,
like with the strobe lights, and then you wake up.
I don't think they had strobe; they just had the disco ball back then. Strobe lights are 90s.
Yeah, I got you.
I know a lot. I watched American Psycho.
Yeah, you've done a lot of drugs over
that's
the years.
That's not true. So, what was your favorite off of Get Rich or Die Tryin'? Again, I was talking about which ones sort of told a story, which ones were the gangster one. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go with the title track. I'm gonna go with the first track, Hustler's Ambition. When it started, it just took me by surprise, how good and clean, the beats were.
Yeah.
And, how strong his, rap game was. And I was just impressed, and that's when I was, genuinely, Gotta think for this gangster shit, they love me. Black Chuckers, Black Scully, leather Pele Pele. I take spit over rainbow shit. I'm a fan, dude, got that silver duct tape on my tray handle. The women in my life bring confusion to shit. So Nino and New Jack, I'll cancel that bitch. Look at me, this is the life I chose. Niggas around me so cold. Man, my heart gone. Wait, did I just miss the boat on Fitty?
Yeah.
So I'm going with Hustler's Ambition, which was also the first single released, so they definitely knew that they put their best foot forward that
one. Yeah, I like that one. You said that it was, I saw somebody wrote that it was very minimalist.
Yeah, that was me. I did that on, what was that? It was spiderloke.com?
Yeah, spiderloke.
My fan page?
Spiderloke.com, geocities.com, hashtag.
Angel Fire.
Hashtag spiderloke, hashtag 12345, hashtag Mike.
Yeah, forward slash.
HTML.
Yeah.
I like that one too. Somebody wrote that it was very minimalist yet is effective. I had a couple that I was torn between. What If?
I really liked What If.
Which was, I didn't think I was going to like it first.
It doesn't come off as 50 at all.
No, when I first started listening to it, it was like, what if I didn't do this? And what if I didn't? I was like, well, this is going to be repetitive and dumb.
Right.
But it actually ended up being really good.
Yeah.
And I thought, when you said it didn't really sound like 50, he didn't come off overly charismatic in it. But I thought that
or
was kind of cool.
Yeah.
That it was a nice change of pace. If I got on some pretty boy shit like Puffy, niggas in the hood, man, they just wouldn't love me. If I wore a suit every day like Jay-Z, niggas would think I bought my fucking head and went crazy. If I put diamonds in my teeth like Baby, I wouldn't stand a chance of trying to sell like Shady. If I put out bullshit joints like AZ, every chance niggas get, they... And then I also liked Best Friend.
Yeah, that's
which
fun.
Was, had some good, I thought it was a nice contrast to the thuggish mood of the album. You picked out for me, that's why I'm so fly. I was your best friend. I want you around all the time. I want you around me all the time. I'll be your best friend. If you promise you'll be mine. Girl, promise you'll be mine. He said he's just a
just a friend.
Uh-huh.
Now, girl, let's not pretend.
Come on.
Either he is or he ain't your man.
Were there any songs on either album that kind of stood out as, like, you would want to skip them for sure?
I wasn't a huge fan of When It Rains, It Pours.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, like you said, it was repetitive.
Yeah, it's boring.
Like, he sort of wavers between, we'll call it, like, spitting. Like, when, like, he raps at sort of his,
yeah,
his rap talk level. And then he'll try and sing sometimes. And this one just sort of sounded like he was reading a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And then for the Bee Gees album,
Banana.
I gave it two. I just really didn't like the Manhattan skyline.
Yeah.
You know what I did kind of like? I like that Open Sesame. That was weird. A little racist and kind of weird.
Yeah.
And cool. Night on Disco Mountain with, like, the sound effects. Like, they just, you know, they got to get a little, they were having fun, you know? Yeah. Like, they were talented people doing, like, messing around in a specific genre, and I appreciate that.
For me, the Get Rich or Die Trying, Don't Need No Help, Young Buck, I hated that song.
Yeah.
I just didn't understand it.
Right.
I didn't understand the placement of it. I didn't understand the message behind it. Disliked that song quite a bit.
Right.
For the Saturday Night Fever album, Disco Inferno was just too long.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like
11
eight?
Minutes.
Yeah.
It's just
a marathon.
It had some good sounds in it, but it was just too long to
be. Yeah, just cut it down.
Yeah, to keep, like, if there was like a 3 or 4 minute version of it, it might be better. You know, I'm not a big fan of, like, instrumental stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I think you can put that on a different album, yeah,
like the score. Yeah, for sure.
I always think, you know, we did the Batman soundtrack several episodes back, and I used to have the Batman Prince soundtrack, and then I also had the score, like the Danny Elfman.
Right.
Score of it.
And they didn't want to.
And they didn't intermingle them.
Right, because they're both independent.
Right. And they both, you know, stand alone, you know, stand tall alone on their own. So that was kind of my impressions of the two albums.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. So looking at our stats here, we've got Saturday Night Fever's soundtrack beating out Get Rich or Die Trying as a soundtrack that did better than a film.
Nice little close battle, though.
Yeah. They were both. I enjoyed both of them.
And they were both insanely successful, which is why they fit into our criteria.
Collectively, 19 million units.
That's
outrageous.
19 million G units.
So, I would recommend both of them.
Sure.
If you got some time, if you're, like, feeling nostalgic, put in the disco stuff. And
or
if you're
just
not.
Just want to shake your ass.
If you don't like disco music, bounce around. There's plenty of non-specific disco music on there. And if you like rap music, Get Rich or Die Trying is a really
good... It's a solid album.
Yeah.
There's, for sure.
You know, because there's so many, you could skip two or three and still, like, have a good hour of quality listening on your hands.
Even if you just listened to the 50s stuff, and then even if you just listened to the Bee Gees stuff.
It's worth your time.
Make yourself a super album, actually. To take the Bee Gees stuff and the 50 stuff off them and
get, like, rich or get Saturday Night Fever.
Get rich or get fever.
And then die.
I would like it.
So we'll be back in just a moment with some recommendations of soundtracks that did better than their films.
G-Unit!
All right, welcome to the recommendation part of the show where we tell you soundtrack that was better than its movie that we want you to listen to that we did not already talk about today. So, Dan, do you have a recommendation or you want me to go first?
You can go first.
All right, so the movie I picked, which was bad, was the 2003 mass Daredevil that had Ben Affleck as the titular character. It's also got Jennifer Garner, Michael Clark Duncan, Colin Farrell.
A lot of talent in there for a bad movie. Yeah.
And the premise of Daredevil clearly is not a bad one because the Netflix picked it up.
It's awesome.
Knocked out 2 seasons. Now it's got Defenders coming up. Like, people love it. I enjoyed the first season. Haven't watched all the second season yet. So the story isn't a bad one. The concept isn't a bad one. The execution in this movie was awful. Like, if you remember, Jennifer Garner plays Elektra, and no spoilers because there's a movie afterwards, but she gets killed in the movie. Like, you don't even know who she is yet as a character, and they just kill her. And you're like, well, this just doesn't seem sustainable. Also, like, it was poorly acted, overacted you know, the characters are all like outrageously exaggerated. But the soundtrack is, of course, post-grunge and new metal, new spelled N-U, you know, which is right up my alley.
Yeah.
It's also 74 minutes long. Pretty long, again. Noticeably, some of the stuff, the artists you would recognize from, like, the 2000s era, Fuel, The Calling, Saliva, Seether, Nappy Roots, Moby, Chevelle, Hoobastank, Finger 11. I don't recognize the other ones, but albums best known for being the first time anybody heard Bring Me to Life by Evanescence.
Okay.
Which sort of just exploded onto the scene. This also has a song by Nickelback, and I just casually try to gloss over that. But this is one of the only...
Look at this photograph. Every time I do, it makes me laugh.
You know a lot of those words.
Yep. And what the fuck is on Michael's head?
Yeah, that's a real dumb song.
There you go.
But so the soundtrack was, you know, I would say, like, very mismatched with the feeling of the film. Which, I guess, works in its favor because I much more enjoyed the album. I think I even bought it, which, you know, I didn't really understand the whole idea of buying a soundtrack album until I'm like, this has stuff I can't get anywhere else, and I really like it. So, also, they did this thing where, like, they had songs inspired by the movie. Drowning Pool featuring Rob Zombie had a song called The Man Without Fear, and that gave me, like, I got more out of the movie and the concept of it because they like wrote music specifically for it, which I thought was really cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
My recommendation for a soundtrack that was better than the movie is the 1993 American romantic drama film directed by John Singleton, Poetic Justice, starring Janet Jackson and Tupac Shakur.
That wasn't a good movie? I never saw it.
No, it was not a good movie. Bad. Janet was actually nominated for a Golden Raspberry.
For
Best Actress.
That's too bad.
That's under awards and nominations here. She won for Worst New Star.
She got nominated in two categories? She was
nominated for Worst Actress and Worst New Star, and she actually won.
But she's not a bad actress, right?
Like, no, she's not. I mean, no, she's not a bad actress. But she's fine.
It was just the movie was so bad.
It was.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, it wasn't great. It kind of came out at the same time when like they were letting Tupac make movies. Like he was in Juice and
yeah.
I didn't see any of those. It was kind of in like that New Jack City like time frame and
okay.
I don't know.
So not worth it because I haven't.
No, the movie's not
taken.
The movie's not very good.
Okay.
Like
Golden Raspberry bad though?
I don't know if I put it Golden Raspberry bad, but it's just not very good. But the soundtrack's freaking amazing. We've got TLC on the soundtrack, Warren G and Nate Dogg, Naughty by Nature, Tupac, Snoop Dogg, Babyface, Usher, like a very young Usher, like a 15 or 16 year old Usher, Stevie Wonder, Tony. Not to be confused with Tony. But I just, this was one of the, when I was really into buying soundtracks, and I think we mentioned it on a different episode, I was really into buying soundtracks because they were kind of like a conglomeration of a lot of different artists. And Poetic Justice soundtrack, amazing. The movie, not so much.
Cool, that sounds good. So now you have four soundtracks that were better than the movies that you could check out. Both of our recommendations, and actually both of the ones we listened to. Just so you remember, Saturday Night Fever did beat Get Rich or Die Trying, but you should also check out Poetic Justice and the Daredevil soundtrack. Dan, this is our plug section. Let's talk about the podcast that you have independent from this one.
So I currently am participating in two other podcasts because I'm a podcast superstar.
You're a media mogul.
I am.
Not a media mongrel, because that's that's rude.
A media mogul like Harvey Weinstein.
Oof.
Too soon?
How many potted plants have you jerked off into recently? If it's less than 30, then you're better than he is.
What's the define recently?
All right.
The last 6 months?
This seems like a quagmire. Why don't you tell me about this podcast?
So I currently do a podcast with my wife. The lovely Jessica Rhino. We do a Harry Potter themed podcast called Broomsticks and Butterbeer, where we work through the Harry Potter saga chapter by chapter and do a discussion after each chapter. So it's kind of like a, you know, you read the chapter, listen along with us, and laugh along with us.
Companion fan cast.
And then the Rhino Wrestling Review, if for those of you that have that crossover for pro wrestling, yeah. all six of you.
It's a Venn diagram overlap. It exists.
There is a slight overlap in the middle between this podcast and my other podcast. You were on one recently.
We did a
watch along.
Yeah, it was like a dubbing, like an audio commentary track to Royal Rumble 1.
Yeah, to an old shitty pay-per-view. So.
And it was just as outrageous as you can imagine something in the 80s would be.
It was really it was bad and super funny. So
yeah, it was a good
time. I think you should listen along with it. We just had our 50th episode, so we just celebrated number 50, which is awesome.
You're listening to this April 1st, so how many more would you bang out by then?
100, like, maybe?
Holy smokes.
Probably not.
Yeah, Dan started this other podcast yesterday, and he's already on 50. But
it's kind of like a soap opera, like where it's not good quality, but there'd be a lot.
There's
of
a
them.
Lot of content.
So
turning out an hour a day every day for the rest of our lives.
Yeah. So I do both of those. The wrestling one's also on prowrestling.com, which is a burgeoning website, and you can follow me on Twitter @ Dan Rhino, DanRyno.
All right. Well, thank Dan again. Thank you for being here. This is a lot of fun.
Pleasure was all yours.
Naturally. This has been Comparing Apples to Oranges. I'm Mike.
Dan.
We'll catch you next time.
G-Unit.
Still not tired of it.
My definition of a thug, nigga.
What you doing?
Mobbing like a motherfucker.
What you doing?
Wow. Episode 25. Didn't think it was going to happen. First episode of year 3 of the podcast. Hope you're enjoying it. Go ahead and take a look at us on Tumblr. We're comparing apples to oranges, all one word, .tumblr.com. That's where you can find links for my co-host stuff. Info about past episodes. If you have ideas or comments for future episodes, be sure to send it to Twitter account @ the Cato Podcast, all one word, or email us at catopodcast@gmail.com. Intro, outro, and music bed music has been switched up just a little bit. Still the song Thumbs Up by that great artist Leisure B. If you liked what he was putting down, go ahead and check him out at humanworkshop.com. And I hope you're having a great April 1st. Bye, everybody.